You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all?
Yeah. Our government cares about
they ain't
you.
Ain't giving up a second now. Thought about you, no. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell
ghetto
me.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and in honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening Ashe. To Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. I'm your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope you're going to have a great weekend. I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it is not, and it has to get done, it must get done, you will do it. And you will do it safely. That's right. It's still being safe out there. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, don't take nothing for granted. Yep. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcasts. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, once again, this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All times are going to give our Eastern times. On Mondays from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Jihad Ahmed. And that's followed by from 8 p.m. to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Itaki Kamban. And then from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report on Wednesdays from 8 to 9. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening, brothers and sisters. Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Fridays at 8 p.m. Saturdays from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then Saturday evening from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We buy black. We buy black. Get everything you need from American African owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. The largest online marketplace for American African owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. I don't know if you've seen on your Facebook some promotions for WeBuyBlack.com and free shipping and so forth. Brothers and sisters, go to WeBuyBlack.com. Products that are produced by us, for us. And, you know, and of course, their quest to build a supermarket here in the Atlanta area. They're constantly seeking donations. It should only have taken a month. It is years. Frustration, right? The frustration. Oh, man, I tell you. Yeah. Africa for the Africans. Brother Bamani Tahimba is returning home tomorrow from his trip in Ghana. Ghana tour was May 24th to June 5th. The next tour
And it's Tanzania, November 18th through the 29th. Then another trip to Ghana at the end of the year, December 24th to January 5th, 2022. And then Senegal and Gambia again at April 1st through the 11th, 2022. At present time, our trips are $3,700 per person. $3,700, you put a cash down payment down and pay it, you know, stretch it out over the time. And then next thing you know, there you go. You're ready to go to a trip of a lifetime. You know, to the trip of a lifetime, you're ready to go. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, and I know when he comes back, he'll be posting them because he does all the time. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. That is AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Baba Rinoco Rashidi, he has a webinar June 25th and 26th. Friday, June 25th, 8 p.m. Eastern Time to 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And then on Saturdays, 11 a.m. Eastern Time to 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Saturdays. And it's Africa, the African star over Europe, the African star over Europe, the African you know, Baba Rinoco has documented the African presence around the globe. It's just phenomenal, the African presence around the globe. He has a trip upcoming, July 18th through to August 3rd in Ghana with Professor Small and Dr. Lynn Jeffries. He's more than likely he'll be there early, and then he'll be leaving to join his tour in Kemet, July 31st to August 13th in Kemet. And his trip is $4,200. Give him a call at 323-803-8663. That's 323-803-8663. You can contact him through email at rinoco@hotmail.com. Rinoco, R-U-N-O-K-O, @hotmail.com. Baba Rinoco Rashidi. Habashah. Habashah Incorporated. Habashahincorporated.org. These brothers and sisters have been doing the work here in the Atlanta area as well as in Ghana. Their programs, Habashah Works, Black to Our Roots, the Sustainable Seeds, the Golden Growers, and the Urban Green Jobs. All of those projects ongoing. And, of course, on the continent, the Kashi Project. And there are pictures of the progress of the Kashi Project, as well as a program to help you repatriate, to help you go back home. So check out HabashahIncorporated.org. HabashahIncorporated.org. Habashah stands for Helping Africa by Establishing Schools Home and Abroad. The LEDGE Group. LEDGE stands for Land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics. The LEDGE Group. Go to the LEDGEGroup.com. They have a raffle for a African safari in Tanzania, a Tanzanian safari in Tanzania, and check out what it takes to be a part of the sign up for that raffle. Also, to LEDGE members, you have an opportunity to purchase land in Tanzania. If you are a member of LEDGE, you can purchase land at $250 an acre. That's right, $250 an acre. Tanzania might be the place for you, brothers and sisters. Of course, LEDGE deals with the four areas that are vital for human existence: food, water, clothing, and shelter. Food, water, clothing, and shelter. They have 12 projects on the continent in 6 countries with over 170 employed and over 260 members. They need more members, brothers and sisters. Become a part of the LEDGE Group. LEDGEGroup.com. Bibi Toomey. Bibi Atumi, Bibi Atumi, ABIBITUMI.com, Bibi Atumi. Tomorrow, June 5th, their Saturday seminar series, The Power is in Pan-African Name. The power is in the Pan-African name. That is at 1 o'clock our time, 5 o'clock in Ghana. Obadola Kamban is the instructor or the presenter. Outstanding. June 9th, Baba Barudi Centered, Building African Realities. To attend this free and question and answer session, kindly click at the scheduled time. They give you that. And of course, that's going to be 6 p.m. Eastern time. 6 p.m. Eastern time, early in the morning. African Centered. I'm Bibi Atumi, Baba Barudi. And then following Saturday, the 12th, Seminar Series Number 19, African Spirituality, Concepts of the Person. The person has a multiple selves. And then on the 20th, Sunday the 20th, Affirming African Manhood, taking back the power to define, defend, and demonstrate what African manhood is and needs to become. And Baba Barudi's in that mix, a number of other brothers. And then on the 26th of June, Seminar Series Number 20, Africa Combat Forums Hidden in Plain Sight. African Combat Forums Hidden in Plain Sight. And you can get that on Bibi Atumi. Go to bibiatumi.com. Become a member of Bibi Atumi so you can have access to the shopping that you can get, the news, information, crowdfunding, all of those good things for bibiatumi.com. Wadada's Healthy Marketing Juice Bar, located in the West End here in Atlanta on Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard, across the street from Soul Veg, up the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna, which is open today from 1 to 7 on Fridays and from 1 to 7 on Saturdays at the Shrine of the Black Madonna, located on Ralph David Abernathy in the West End. And go to the Wadada's for delicious smoothies and health drinks, and also too on the weekends, they have vegan catered food. So check out Wadada's. Also, too, they do Nature Bookstore. I saw Mama Nia yesterday. The store is beautiful. If you're in the Atlanta area near the Greenbrier Mall, please go stop by the Medu Bookstore. If you can't, but you're looking for a book, give her a call at 404-346-3263. 404-346-3263. If she doesn't have the book that you on hand, believe me, she'll get it for you. She has a fine selection of books, postcards, greeting cards, gift certificates, T-shirts, and all kinds of good stuff at the Greenbrier Mall located. And, of course, their number to call is 404-346-3263. Kazemde Ajamu, my good brother, the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia, he opened up a coffee bar, and he's just doing great things. Kazemde Ajamu. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. The number to call is 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. There is light in the Black Dot. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Their Thursday night broadcast last night went off well on Blog Talk Radio. That's blogtalkradio.com/ULU. The name of the program is Dare to Win. That's Uplifting Us. If you want to call to listen, you can. If you want to make a comment, question, or concern, you can do that as well by dialing 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us every Thursday night from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. On Fridays, I'll be announcing consistently, once again, my good brother Yusuf Muhammad's program, Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness, also on Blog Talk Radio. From 4 to 6 on Fridays, dial 563-999-3889. That's 563-999-3089. From 4 to 6 on Fridays, Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness. Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop, located at 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia, inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. Brothers and sisters, Sun God Essential, one-stop natural shop. Give our sister Shelly Armanset a call at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. Check it out. Out there in Forest Park, Georgia. Sun God Essential, your one-stop natural shop. Sanjay Dash Haiti, Sister Gabrielle Aurelia is doing great work in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti, and she deserves to be supported. Go to Sanjay, Sonjay-Haiti, AYITI.org, Sanjay-Haiti. And when you go there, look at the work that's being done, the children, the schoolwork, they deal with education, health care, sustainable agriculture, and entrepreneurship. Sanjay-Haiti. Akabin House and Akabin Institute. Akabin Institute, and that's, of course, is Baba Barudi. And where am I looking at? I'm looking at somewhere. I'll find out. Ah, there it is. So the Akabin Institute school is out, but Akabin Institute is having a summer program. That's right. They got a summer school program. We are offering a six-week program beginning June 7th and ending July 16th. It is open to students from 4th grade through the 12th grade. Okay? Here are some options. Here are some options. And Mama Ya Barudi, she's language arts and math tutoring. That's Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. One-on-one sessions must be scheduled in advance if that's what you need. And then Baba Barudi, ourselves, Tuesday, our story. Tuesdays and Thursdays, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. And chess from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. And you can contact the Barudis at 404-753-7237 or give them an email. Drop an email at mwalimubarudi@yahoo.com. Mwalimubarudi. MWALIMUBARUTI. mwalimubarudi@yahoo.com. The 7th annual Complementarity Conference is tomorrow, and I have an invitation. I'm going to take it. It's from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. tomorrow, Saturday, from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. tomorrow. Okay, lectures, breakout sessions, collective discussions. Of course, it's $10 per person, per adult, and $5 per teen. Okay, and what you do is you make that donation via PayPal account, which is yabaruti@yahoo, yaabaruti@yahoo. Include the pertinent information, which is complementarity conference, your name, your email address, so they can send you the link. Do that today, so you'll be ready tomorrow at 4 p.m. Or you can do it tomorrow; it'll still be there. Okay, that's right. Complementarity knows. Loves are not public spectacles. Compliments committed to themselves and the front line must have spaces and places that they reserved for themselves alone. Discretion and privacy make for endurance. Everything is not to be shown beyond the two. So y'all keep your relationship. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. An equation for reparations. Baba Barudi has July 3rd at 7 p.m., An Equation for Reparations from his book, Sovereignty and Remembrance. An Equation for Reparations lecture, and that is going to be $15 per person, $20 a family. Okay, make your donation through either the PayPal, YahBarudi@Yahoo, or the Cash App, the $ YahMBarudi. Okay, and include the pertinent information, which, of course, is the title, Equation for Reparations, your name, and your email address, so you can receive the link. All right, brothers and sisters. That's my good brother, Baba Mwalimubarudi, and all the fine work and great work that he is doing. And I pray that he continues to do so. We definitely need him. And, okay. The Inyesesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. The Inyesesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. June 3rd. I have shaken rivers out of my eyes. Carolyn Rogers. The effort to individualize African people out of existence is a progressive, enduring, unseen aspect of the Ma'afa. The more itemized we become, the less we are able to see each other as family, community, and nation. The politics of Western science and its handmaiden, the internet, are the main instruments through which this process is being promoted and facilitated. A primary example of this social engineering would be in distinguishing right from wrong, or equally impactful at the level of culture, the African way from that which is the European way. The idea that things, acts, and words and thoughts can only be socially or individually defined as right or wrong is based on the felonious idea that there is no divine moral or ethical order in the universe. When you prove that nothing should be judged, that nothing is naturally wrong, perverted, or problematic, then anything becomes right. Everything becomes reasonable, individual choice, or at least defensively argued. Once this occurs in a racist, evil environment whose mentalcidal victims seek absolute escape, who they naturally are at all and at any cost, we see the degeneration of the idea of a people being a people and a progressive escalation, the individualized appling of ways that are in direct opposition to the spirit of their ancestors. If this calculated way, we all become one race and history is ignored. Affirmed from the heart, I feel for my people. Affirmed from the heart, I feel for my people. June 4th. Hence, our enemies who have brutally disrespected African life have already secretly established their rightful place in our history and in African judgment. Beyond them, however, these Africans who have allied themselves with our enemies and thus have failed to account for themselves on the correct, righteous side of our struggle will also be relegated to their proper place in African judgment. Ashe. Kobe Cambon. Negro is a synonym for clown, i.e. a silly, weak, treasonous-minded performing in a three-ring circus for Asians, Arabs, and Europeans. A three-ring Asian, Arab, and European circus. Only clowns would find it appropriate to guard the circus or deprive ringmasters toy with their children. Clowns are always eager to do Urugu's work. Willful in their wayward ways, they have arrogantly made creating chaos, discourse, and dissension within our ranks their life's mission. Chronically inept, crippled by a seething self-hatred and deeply internalized sense of powerlessness, the only ones to whom they are not useless is their destroyers. Lies without hope, or at least no hope that would entail rising higher than groveling over the love of their greatest enemies, are doomed to be wasted, venting confused and anger against the only ones who actually can love them. Negroes and Negroettes alike are pitiful. Affirm, I do not pity the blighted, treasonous, leaving them among us. I do not pity the blighted and the treasonous living among us. June 5th, a child is more like to grow up living with both parents during our captivity, during slave days, than he or she is today. I repeat, a child is more likely to grow up living with both parents during our captivity than he or she is today. Joy Jones. It is not us. We are not the source. And origin should always be the first answer sought in honest scientific questioning. That said, when it comes to the state of African families, be it possible or probable, single-headed single-headedness, divorce, or domestic violence, the source of the worst of these statistics can readily be found in the intensely individualizing, classifying, and an oppressing culture of which we Africans, as alien and enemy, are subject to under them. It is the social evolutionary path to which we have been assigned as relatively ignorant, powerless imitators, which has broken so many of our families into a myriad of ever disconnecting, hateful, wandering pieces. History tells all, and the lies Urugu has embedded in the one they have written in an effort to delude us into believing in their social supremacy and idyllic beauty, yuck, have been revealed for those of us who are brave and re-Africanized enough to face it. The only question is of whether we have become so much of what they would have us to be that we cannot see this truth, nor distinguish ourselves from the primary blame. Relative to our family structures, we should bear in mind the glaring and telling fact that there were proportionally many single female-headed families in traditional European society as they are in ours today. They pretend that broken homes are a relatively new phenomenon. Even they essentially began with Africans about a half century ago. So we misguidedly seek blame within for societal patterns which have historically characterized Uruguayan patterns in society. Dysfunction is not us in pre-Uruguayan statistical fact or their cultural and silly trait. It is not us. Affirm, as my ancestors are historically, I am child family centered. As my ancestors were historically family centered, I am child family centered. The Inye Sesem of daily revolutionary thought. The Inye Sesem. I'm going to get off and get into it. Wednesday when we left, we were talking about the massacre. And of course, there were many massacres. I can talk about a few maybe today. But I'm going to, of course, talk about the Tulsa massacre. There's a video I'm going to play. I'm going to ask for your indulgence because I'm going to stop it and tell you who's speaking so you have an idea who's speaking and what they're saying. Starting off with my brother, Chief Igumawali, and April Ryan is kind of narrating. April Ryan, I'm not sure who she's with now, but, you know, she with the press corps at one time. And of course, Donald Trump talked about her. He talked about all his sisters. Yeah, you know, he talks about everybody. And the Europeans loved it. He loved his arrogance and his ignorance and his stupidity and his inability to even form coherent sentences. Man. Jeez, these folks. And because of the lie that he consistently perpetuated, you have all this madness that's going on across this country with voter suppression. And I remember the voter suppression right after the gubernatorial race, which Stacey Abrams lost and should not have lost had they not purged many American African voters from the rolls. Because the Secretary of State, who was in charge of the election, he's in charge of the election, also ran for governor. That's ridiculous. That should never happen. He also ran for governor. A true, if there ever was a conflict of interest, a true example. And that's why I have nothing. And of course, all of these states, particularly southern states, are doing things with voter suppression, you know, and it's ridiculous. So, in fact, the same thing with the Oklahoma governor, who was Republican. You know, that's why there was a lot of stuff happening with the Oklahoma situation. In these videos, I don't see my friend Kevin Matthews, State Senator Kevin Matthews. And I've seen another piece I saw online with him talking about Tulsa Rising. This was a $30 million project. And if you were in Tulsa this past week and weekend, or if you've seen videos, you notice, particularly on that little bit of stretch of Greenwood where there's still businesses that about a block long, block and a half long at the most, before you get to the expressway, the underpass, and then you see AME, St. Vernon, AME Church, African Methodist Episcopal Church, and across the street from that is the Greenwood Cultural Center. And then there's the field where they had the festival, the music playing, and so forth. But that little stretch there, at the end of that is a construction going on, and that is Greenwood Rising. And that was $30 million donated through private donations. And it became an issue. That's why they didn't have the concert with, Stacey Abrams. She was supposed to have been there too. John Legend, the concert with John Legend. And so they, Kevin Matthews, State Senator Matthews, along with some others, they took pictures in a little press conference and so forth. With Greenwood Rising. And one of the issues that some money should have gone to the survivors, of which I guess there's three. I'm not sure if there's more, but I guess there's three. Mother Fletcher, her brother, who was 1 year old at the time. She was seven. And then there's another elder. Her name escapes me at this moment, but she was 106 years old. The three of them rode in the memorial parade through a horse-drawn carriage. And they have been, of course, given much love, deservingly so, you know. And so I'm going to play, and I'm going to be, like I said, I'm going to be stopping to let you know who the person is talking. And this comes from Russell Westbrook, Brother Russell Westbrook. He used to play for Oklahoma, you know, the Oklahoma Thunder, Oklahoma City Thunder, the OKC Thunder. And, of course, he played for Washington, and he broke the record for triple-doubles, scoring, rebounding, and assist. The most triple-doubles by any player in the history of the National Basketball Association. Great player, and unfortunately, he wouldn't probably, you know, never... He did play for a championship. They played against the Miami Heat, and the Heat beat them. They had, at the time they played, they did have Russell Westbrook, along with Kevin Durant, along with James Harden. James Harden was, at that time, coming off the bench. And, man, they I think they lost 4-1 or something like that. But to me, what's important, and LeBron did one, I think that was on CNN, executive produced, and Russell Westbrook's was on CNBC, I believe, MSNBC, I'm not sure. But anyway, this is from part of the presentation by Russell Westbrook and his people. And I want to try my best to, hopefully I don't mess any of this up. Please. Don't mess any of this up. And we'll talk about other massacres. You know, brothers and sisters, as I'm watching all of this madness, and what bothers me tremendously is that we keep hoping and praying. Damn it, y'all. Stop it. Come together. Let's get the hell out of here. Let's pray and begin to put things in order to get the hell out of here. For those who want to stay, stay. If you want to stay, if you believe, because one, what I read to you earlier, that's why I love the Enye Sesem. What I read to you earlier, you know, they consistently, what did I always say, what America's about? Individual, I start off with individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. I don't know if I read that or I came up that with myself. I've been saying it for decades. Yeah, for decades. Individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. I just read the Enye Sesem where it promotes this individualism, which of course is anti-African. We are a collective people. When I watched a piece the other day, Mark Lamont Hill interviewing this Caucasian who has successfully, so yes, he says, challenged critical race theory. You know, and brought it into a focus where it will not and cannot be taught in schools. They got to teach the greatness of the founding fathers, the American exceptionalism, American westward expansion and manifest destiny and all this other bullshit. And he was saying, no, I'm just, yes, I'm an Italian. Well, of course, at one time, in the idea of collective whiteness, Italians were excluded. You know? Whatchacalls were excluded. The Irish were excluded. You know? And, of course, we were never included. That's what we must understand. And that is our problem because we believe that we are, we too, seeing America. These people are selfish and greedy. They will never share. They will never be right. They will never do right. We will always be our numbers in terms of social ills will be more profound in us than anybody else, than any other group. It defies all laws of probability, but it continuously happens. I'll speak more. We're going to do this this particular piece. I know we may go over, but hey, it's Friday. And so, like I said, I'm going to try my best to stop this piece and to say to you who is speaking, okay? Once again, you're going to hear my brother, Chief Igumawali, out of Tulsa, Oklahoma. If you saw the memorial ceremony a few days ago, that was Memorial Day, the morning of. I saw it that evening. My good brother, Brother Lust, Brother Theodore Lust, sent me that, and I sent it out to a few. If you haven't heard and you want to hear it, you can just email me at OSHI427, A as in Apple, D as in Dog, E as in Edward. OSHI427ADE@gmail.com. I'll repeat one time. OSHI427ADE@gmail.com. And I'll send you that link. There's also a part of that link is a 3-hour program, Roland Martin's piece that he produced while he was there fronting. So, okay. And this is Chief Igumawali speaking right now, and he begins it.
We can seek justice or we can seek vengeance. Today, we're seeking justice. But the more they move away from it, the more vengeful we feel.
Survivors of the Tulsa massacre and their descendants pled their case for reparations in Washington.
This is April Ryan. She is has the moderator of this segment. This is April Ryan, a reporter, good sister.
D.C., May 19th, 2021. They based their claim on human rights violations of the massacre and its aftermath on the international definition of genocide.
I want America to know that the people who built and died in Greenwood, many of them had just returned from war and had experienced what it meant to be a human being, what it meant to be a citizen of a nation, to vow to uphold the oaths of this country, the constitution of this country. And they came back and they saw their community flourishing and they understood the constitution and they said, we have to defend our country from tyranny. We have the right to the 14th Amendment. They believed in it more than the people who wrote it. So when the event of Greenwood happened, I want people to know we didn't lay down in Greenwood. We fought. The only reason we lost Greenwood is because they got 6 airplanes and went to the sky because they knew they could not win. And they bombed Greenwood like they were bombing in Germany, bombing in France.
Was it civilian planes or was it military planes?
Civilian planes flown by institutional government people, police department, National Guard. That's why you have to use the term Holocaust, domestic terrorism. You have to call it exactly what it is. We can't afford to marginalize it. How do you destroy a community of 10 to 15,000 people in a matter of hours, in 24 hours? How do you do that? Coordinated, methodical, well thought out. What do you do with the bodies? You dump them in rivers, you throw them in mass graves because, and you cut off the telegraph lines and you shut off the city so nobody can come in and out, and you do not inform the governor. And then you get rid of the bodies because when you do call the governor and the National Guard comes in, you can't say black people invaded downtown Tulsa if you got a bunch of dead bodies in the black community and not in the white community. You can't say it was an invasion by black people.
Even the firefighters that came to put the fires out, the rioters pushed them away to allow North Tulsa to burn.
So, Senator Langford, with that, we want to talk about Black Wall Street. We want to talk about what happened then.
This is Senator, State Senator Langford from the Oklahoma legislature.
And the way forward. Can you regale us once again? Because everyone does not know. They know it happened. They don't know all the ins and outs.
I'm glad to be able to do that. What's interesting for this is not only did you not know, most people didn't know, and most Oklahomans even didn't know. Literally, the newspapers that wrote about it in some of their salacious headlines and all the things they did during that time in 1921, later the newspapers went back and took it out of their big portfolio of all their papers they had printed that year. Police reports were scrubbed. This was such a horrible event that the newspapers in Tulsa, the law enforcement in Tulsa, literally just tried to erase it. And for decades and decades, no one talked about it. And you could just walk up to an Oklahoman that had studied Oklahoma history and talk about Black Wall Street, Greenwood District is what it was known then as well, or talk about the race massacre in 1921. And they would say, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Tulsa continues to be a painful, dark moment that is felt in the bloodline of those in Tulsa and Oklahoma, those who came from Tulsa and Oklahoma.
This is Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee of Texas. She took over after John Conyers, and John Conyers had been unfortunately was never able to pass the bill just to do a study. And of course, Congresswoman Lee said that has been expanded upon, going beyond just a study of the impact for the case for reparations. So this is Sheila Jackson Lee.
Scattered around the world. It is in the DNA and bloodline of, I understand, 3 remaining relatives.
My family didn't really talk about it until 97. Yes, because my grandfather became a plaintiff in the reparations lawsuit. It wasn't a big deal not talking about Greenwood. It was about what happened after. The Klan had what they call whipping parties or kidnappings, you know, and the Klan's numbers increased by the thousands, 25,000 new members after the massacre joined the Klan. So in 22, most people don't understand, and this is what I learned. He said throughout that first year, the reason a lot of people never came back is because they terrorized Black Tulsans for an entire year to ensure they would never, ever talk about this again.
What we have to realize is that the government, the city of Tulsa and the county of Tulsa.
Who you're hearing now is the attorney for the descendants of Tulsa, Attorney Simmons. And he spoke on Capitol Hill, and he did an excellent presentation that I heard in one of the presentations in his seminars that they had, Attorney Simmons.
A mob of over 2,000 white men deputized them, armed them, and gave them the order to invade and destroy Greenwood. That is a fact. And it's also a fact that the Tulsa Chamber of Commerce participated in the looting and pillaging and the destruction of Greenwood. And it's also a fact that immediately after the massacre, the chamber, the county, the city, and even the state participated in putting our people into what they called at the time, not my words, their words, concentration camps. And keeping our people in tents for up to 18 months, causing our people to become basically enslaved because you could not leave these concentration camps unless you had a white employer come and sign you out with a green card. Or if you didn't have a white employer, they were, the city and the county were forcing our people to clean up their own community that was destroyed by the government. This was government sanctioned, government authorized, government armed. It's not unique that white supremacy destroyed, killed, burned down Black settlements, businesses, communities. That has happened 1,000 times. But what makes Tulsa so unique is that you have the wealth that is so well documented that was destroyed. And you have, you know, these people that owned the property. We know what they lost.
The banks failed us. Thousands of the survivors of Greenwood lost their life savings in the banks because their bank books burnt up and they couldn't get their money out. And we've researched and found at least 17 of those banks we believe are still operating through Chase and Bank of Oklahoma. We want a conversation with them also.
The reason people use the word massacre today is because we started telling people, even authors and lecturers, we would go to their events and say, listen,
you would use never, the word riot.
Yes, you would never call the Jewish Holocaust a domestic attack. You would never marginalize the event, the things that happened.
And it's terrorism. I think
that's right. Absolutely. It was terrorism. It was ethnic cleansing. It was genocide. It was a Holocaust. If you look up the definition, it fits every single one of those.
Is this genocide? The intent, insofar as the historical record shows, of the people who perpetrated this.
The voice you hear is Mary Frances Berry, former commissioner of U.S. Civil Rights Commission, and the author of a book on Callie House. Callie House was the first sister who petitioned, as she say, for slave pensions and who was imprisoned because of it. A book on Callie House. This is Mary Frances Berry.
Including the folks who dropped the turpentine bombs, the people who gave, government people who gave weapons to the marauders who were going through killing people and destroying property. They wanted to drive out Black people. I mean, they made it clear. They didn't want them there. They wanted them done away with, kill them, go away, or die. I mean, and I don't know whether you want to call it genocide or not, but I would.
This is a human rights issue. The Human Rights Watch has brought in the international collaboration because reparations is an international legal term. And so it is to repair the harm that has been done on the basis of someone's ethnicity or race.
We historically and culturally have always acknowledged genocide in other countries. Why can't we turn inward and face, you know, the vestiges of enslavement and colonialism and how they continue to play out today?
We finally close the circle today by signing the implementing legislation that will permit the United States to ratify the convention and formally join 97 nations of the world in condemning genocide and treating it as a crime. I'm delighted to fulfill the promise made by Harry Truman to all the peoples of the world, and especially the Jewish people. I remember that what the Holocaust meant to me as I watched the films of the death camps after the Nazi defeat in World War II.
The recognition of crimes of this kind, or people always say, well, those happen elsewhere. They don't happen here. And when you don't.
I can't get this Caucasian's name. Apologize. But he's a former ambassador.
International law. I mean, the U.S. did make a genocide in the United States a crime, but only from 1988 onward. The amendment was made in 2007 that said a genocide committed elsewhere, if the person's present in America, could be prosecuted if it happened after 2007. So even our own courts don't have the ability to prosecute anything that happened before those dates. There is no statute of limitations. If you have evidence of a genocide that happened in 1990, you can still prosecute that, but you can't do anything from before the law took effect. And then, of course, the U.S. has not ratified the ICC convention. We've not put ourselves under the jurisdiction of the ICC. We also don't accept the jurisdiction of the International Court of Justice over us as a compulsory matter. And so the U.S. as a matter of policy is very careful of trying to avoid itself from being judged by international institutions. It's in the nature of American exceptionalism, and that's been the rule. If we're going to be effective in dealing with those situations abroad, we have to recognize our own. You don't walk into a room and tell everybody they're wrong and you say, I'm always right. And when you have your own problems, you need to confront them. And we're not persuasive. We're not a useful partner in the world unless we confront our own past.
To my colleagues on this committee, there is only one reason why descendants of the Tulsa Massacre have.
This is a sister from St. Louis, the congresswoman from St. Louis. I apologize because I know her name. I can't read it because it's so small. So, Corey. And I apologize. But this is Sister Corey from St. Louis, the congresswoman from St. Louis.
Not been compensated. And that reason is racism. It's anti-black
Corey Bush.
Racism, to be clear. And it's been stated a couple times, and I want to state it again. It's anti-black racism. Racism is not just slavery and Jim Crow. It is the daily violence that is enacted on our communities each and every day we live in this white supremacist society. Racism is when a group of our elders come to our halls to testify about the massacre they survived without any clear commitment from our leaders as to the reparations they are owed. That is outright racism, full stop.
If passed, H.R. 40 would create opportunities for the Greenwood community to experience restorative justice through commission hearings and take part in the proposal process that would determine financial reparations.
I think that this reparations commission, H.R. 40, if it passes, that it ought to have some provision for people who suffered these very flagrant and tragic injustices in the past. Tulsa would be right up there near the top on my list.
It's not just reparations for the descendants of slaves. We're talking also about reparations right now when it comes to Tulsa, Oklahoma, the 100th anniversary of the massacre there, Black Wall Street, the destruction of a viable, economically viable, self-sustaining Black community that was broken up because of racism.
This will be a governmental commission that will stand up to listen to all voices. It will not close the door on any voice. It'll even listen to the voice that says, I didn't have slaves. Why are you asking me to pay? And we'll be able to say, speak your peace, because we're not asking you to do anything. It's government sanctioned, and the commission will be a governmental commission to assess how the government provided for and allowed slavery that then created the economic wealth of this country. Tulsa, that area was economic wealth that was snatched away. And it was snatched away in a brutal, racist attack. And those are the questions that America has to answer.
I hear a lot these days, some kind of support for reparations, but it's conditional. It's on condition that that reparations is a form of reconciliation, which in part means that it has to be pitched to the perpetrators of racist violence and race discrimination, rather than focusing on compensating the victims, and in more particularly allowing them to determine what a remedy looks like and allowing them to express what their pain and suffering looks like.
The problem lies that the city of Tulsa and those who perpetrated the massacre and the continuing harm do not want to do justice. And they've eluded responsibility for 100 years. And now that they have caused this pain, caused this trauma, caused this generational wealth divide, caused all the problems that Black Tulsans now currently experience, they want to take the massacre and make it a branding opportunity for themselves and create a quote-unquote cultural tourism Disneyland type experience that's only going to benefit white Tulsans and white businesses.
We already had issue with Greenwood Rising only because there was no input from survivors or descendants in the development of that process, of that historical center, right? And that's offensive because it means you're leveraging the history of people who suffered and still suffer today without any recompense, without any platform or program that says a percentage of all income or all of this is going to go to survivors or descendants. You're not even saying that we're going to create a scholarship in which people can benefit, you know, young survivors or descendants can benefit from what is going to be created in this Greenwood Rising Center. Like, how does the community, we know how the world will benefit, right? Because it's increasing, it's a tourism aspect, right? You took 100 years. It took you 100 years to create a center that deals with the resilience and the rising of Greenwood. Why now? Because it goes back to he who controls the circumference of your thinking controls how you visualize the world. Who told us 100 years was significant? We didn't come up with that. We didn't say, hey, it's been 100 years, y'all. Next year, this year, May, it'll be 100 years since they beat the hell out of us. Since they murdered our ancestors. Let's go have a shindig. It may be honorable to have a memorial or an institution built like that and you know, to celebrate the legacy of those people. But without inclusiveness, that's offensive because it means you're strictly leveraging the history for your own benefit.
What do you want? What do you feel would be amenable to make your clients who are centenarians, two are now centenarians, what do you think would make them whole?
To make them whole for the clients, I mean, they need resources now. They are living in poverty, abject poverty. And I say that with all sincerity and respect because, you know, these are
people I know and love very much, and I don't want to embarrass them. But the reality is, they and their families are living in poverty. To be made whole, they need to receive resources that they can utilize for their time here and for their families. But also, the community needs to be made whole, and that's what some of the things we're asking for in our litigation. You know, this community doesn't have a hospital, but we had a hospital before the massacre. We need a hospital. This community needs, we have over $40 to $50 million in today's money in claims that were illegally, unjustly denied based upon racism. That needs to be paid.
We know who made the claims. We know where they lived. We know what was taken. We also even know some of the insurance companies that are still active today. I want to give you their names. CNA, AIG Companies, the Insurance Company of Pennsylvania, Westchester Fire Insurance Company, the Hartford, Great American Insurance Company, Insurance Company of North America, North River Insurance Company, California Insurance Company, Phoenix Assurance Company.
You also have rehabilitative measures that need to be instituted, trauma-informed care, psychological services, legal services, the impacts of this type of incident of racial violence, and then the violations of rights thereafter, not being able to move freely in North Tulsa without being racially profiled by the police, without being killed in the middle of the road by the police, just because you need help with your vehicle. These are all compounded trauma impacts that have impacted the Black community.
Black people aren't looking for a handout. We are looking for good legislation that recognizes our humanity. We are looking for justice because for...
This is Dr. Tiffany Crutcher. Her father was murdered by the Tulsa Police Department. Attorney, Dr. Tiffany Crutcher.
Centuries injustice has cost our families an unspeakable price.
We'd like to live in harmony, to be part of a multicultural society where we are with dignity, that we are respected, that we walk into banks and stores and schools and we own businesses. And our worth, our value is counted. Our Black skin, our tan skin, our multicultural skin is honored and respected. That's what this story is all about.
That is part of Russell Westbrook's documentary, Tulsa Burning. We're going to take a break. We come back from the break. I'm going to read from part of that and some other documents or information as relates to the multiple massacres that have taken place here in this country, of which we have received no compensation, and nobody that did that, who impacted those communities, have ever been brought to justice. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You stay with us. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Other programming we have here, of course, that was War. That was War, Slipping Into Darkness, 1972. And, yeah. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All times are going to give our Eastern times. On Mondays, Acres of Diamonds, Public Affairs Programming with Brother Jahal Ahmed from 6 to 8. And that's followed by Black Therapy Central from 8 to 9 with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. And then from 9 to 10, Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays from 8 to 10, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. On Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report from 6 to 8. Excuse me, from 8 to 9. From 8 to 9 on Wednesdays. If it's Friday and it's 7 p.m. Eastern, it's, excuse me, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, come on, Oshie. 8 p.m. Eastern, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. That's this evening at 8. And then on Saturday, from 4 to 6 on Saturday, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9 on Saturdays, the Sankofa Elders Council. And then once again on Sunday at 7 p.m. on Sunday, time for an awakening. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We're talking once again, this is the part two of the Tulsa massacre. It's not race. It's not a race massacre. It's a war they vamped on our community. Any excuse, as you see through the history, Greenwood, Rosewood, Elaine, Arkansas, Colfax, Louisiana, the Devil's Punch Bowl right after our captivity, Allentown in Los Angeles. So many examples. Russell Westbrook's Tulsa Burning documentary takes an in-depth look at the massacre. The Tulsa documentary is described as an in-depth, sobering look at the tragic events of a century ago and focuses on a specific period from the birth of Black Wall Street to its catastrophic downfall. The two-hour documentary, Tulsa Burning, the 1921 massacre, will commemorate the 100th anniversary of the tragedy, one of the greatest acts of violence in American history. The Greenwood District of Tulsa, Oklahoma, was once the home of to the prosperous and bustling mecca known as Black Wall Street. It was the epicenter of entrepreneurship, ingenuity, resilience for the Black community. There were theaters, hotels, funeral parlors, a library, doctors, lawyers, teachers, and a place of worship. And they show pictures of the devastation. In fact, this comes from The Griot, thegriot.com, thegriot.com/2021/05/28, Russell Westbrook's Tulsa Burning documentary. You put that in the search, you'll get this, thegriot.com/2021/05/28/Russell-Westbrook-Tulsa-Burning-documentary. You know, some deep pictures of the devastation. However, on May 31st, 1921, a Caucasian mob instigated a massacre by firing into homes and bombing and dropping bombs from the air. The attack resulted in 300 deaths, close to 300 deaths or more. That's how I like to put it. Close to 300 deaths or more, because they always got that from 100 to 300. You don't know. I'm saying from 300 deaths or more. A search of blocks burnt down and the destruction of Black Wall Street. The perpetrators were never brought to justice. I repeat, they were never brought to justice. Tulsa Burning, the 1921 massacre, examines the long-lasting effects of that desecration through the eyes of historians, city leaders, the activists, including the Tulsa Historic Society and Museum, the John Hope Franklin Center for Reconciliation, and the Tulsa Massacre Centennial Commission, and the historic Vernon AME Church, among others. Its executive producer is NBA star Russell Westbrook, with Emmy Award-winning director Stanley Nelson of Freedom Writers, and the Peabody and DuPont Award winner Marco Williams, two towns of Jasper, Texas. You know what happened there? That brother got dragged and killed. Just remember the whole thing. Picture of Russell Westbrook. The Tulsa Massacre was not something it was taught about in school or in any history books, Westbrook said in a statement. And, you know, you got to understand, like I said, just as you heard in the Baba Chief Ugumawali said, they erased it. You didn't learn that. It was never meant to be taught. In fact, you were not even supposed to talk about Tulsa at all until some courageous people decided that this history is there. Let's, you know, put it out there in front of the nation, put it out there in front of the world. It was only after spending 11 years in Oklahoma, that I learned of the deeply troubling and heartbreaking event. This is one of many overlooked stories of American Africans. And you know, that's a fact of American Africans being displaced, being taken advantage of being murdered. This is one of many overlooked stories of American Africans in this country that deserve to be told. These are the stories that we must honor and amplify if we can learn from the past and create a better future. The documentary is described as an in-depth, sobering look at the tragic events of a century ago and focuses on a specific period from that time of black emergence of Black Wall Street to its catastrophic downfall over the course of two bloody days and finally the fallout and reconstruction. They show pictures of brothers in wagons being sent to basically what were concentration camps, these tent cities that they had after having burned down all of things. And in fact, they even made us clean up our neighborhood that they burnt down, that they bombed through, you know, with having us clean it up through the threat of death, of course. They're standing by like with shotguns. And many of the people stayed in those tents. Okay, we know that it happened May 31st and June 1st. They stayed in those tents until the spring of the following year, the spring of 1922. Stayed in those tents during the winter months. Here are four takeaways from Tulsa burning. Greenwood seen as a promised land. Greenwood, Tulsa, Oklahoma was seen as the promised land for American Africans after post-Civil War and Reconstruction. As they migrated from all over the South, many settled in the Greenwood area, which had 40 blocks and grew into a community of 10,000. W.O. Gurley is regarded as the father of Black Wall Street, as the business leader who helped transform the district into a flourishing one. At the time of the massacre, the district was worth approximately $2 million, according to historians. And, of course, he built that hotel. I mean, he made many things. W.A. Gurley. On May 31st, 1921, an organized wall of Caucasian people, white people, that is said to have been about 2,000 attacked Black Wall Street with precision after a false rumor spread that a white woman had been sexually assaulted by a black man. More than a dozen planes flew overhead as white men with torches attacked, in addition to breaking windows and doors. Gunfights broke out as black men tried to protect their property, but they were outnumbered and outgunned. About 300 plus were killed, and the entire district was burnt down. There was no attempt made by the police, firefighters, or the National Guard, or anybody to stop the violence. And if you've seen the commencement address from Monday, they had two people who were from the from armed services. I believe they were from the Army. One was a very tall gentleman, and he presented a medal to the descendants and to the survivors, the three survivors, and apologizing for the American Armed Forces not protecting them. You know. Yeah. You know. Yeah. Insult was added to injury when American African people were blamed for the destruction of their own district, of Greenwood District. For those that did not serve and held in what is described as concentration camps, their bodies were placed in mass graves across the city. There is footage shown of current-day grave excavation efforts at Oak Lawn Cemetery to find remains in unmarked coffins. The media at the time of the massacre attempted to downplay what happened with assistance from the city that promised to make amends but failed to do so. No one was held accountable, and Tulsa rebuffed help from the NAACP and sought to acquire the incrimination and the incinerated land. For 50 years, papers such as Tulsa World and Tulsa Tribune did not report on the harrowing experience. However, survivors of the massacre can be seen and heard in archive footage after they went on the record in 1999. It marked a turning point as they recounted the horror they endured. As much as the massacre is a tragedy, the strength of the people, such as Kenny Booker, Eunice Jackson, and J.B. Bates, to tell their stories, force the truth into the light of day. In 1997, a commission was formed to investigate by the state legislature to determine what happened during the deadly siege. Furthermore, in 1921, the Massacre Centennial Commission is committed to developing a project that commemorates the tragic anniversary. 99 years after the massacre, a formal investigation was launched. However, descendants of the tragedy and the community believe there needs to be proper restitution. That's why I'm saying that they also, the Greenwood Rising that you heard in the piece, they have issues with that. The money was donated. Major European Jewish group had donated a good portion of that money. But what the attorney and the survivors and what some descendants are saying, we should be, you know, instead of just having a museum where people can make money, people go and pay their money, you know, they lost everything. Tulsa Burning, 1921 massacre will air on Sunday, May 30th on the History Channel. The network is also partnering with other studios and okay. And they have another piece here, but I'm going to forego that. And just to say that that situation in Tulsa became, and I had talked to Senator Matthews a few times. You know, I'm sorry about this.
And the tech that makes life better. In all sorts of surprising ways.
Okay, we got it. I had to do that. Apologize. What is interesting in the Tulsa situation is it's similar to what's happening in Gaza with the European Jews. I don't know if you caught the news recently. There's been a coalition established to get rid of that hawk, Benjamin Netanyahu. That Yahoo. And I hope it works. He needs to be gone. He should be prosecuted. Benjamin Netanyahu has. I mean, and other European Jews, just like he disrespected Barack Obama when he came here. He don't give a damn. He's just another European. And that's their mindset. Look how they treated the people who they airlifted, the Ethiopian Jews, who are the real first Jews, who are the real Jews, the real Hebrews. The people there, like Netanyahu, all them, those are European Jews who are late converts to Judaism. They are the Ashkenazi. I feel for anybody, any group that has suffered mass murder, the indigenous people here. There were so many. That's why I'm saying, brothers and sisters, you need to check out, exterminate all the brutes. Raoul Peck's documentary, Exterminate All the Brutes. From Tulsa to Gaza, a rap sheet for Caucasian settler colonialism, 100 years long. 100 years long. Plumes of charcoal black smoke billow over Tulsa a century ago today, plummeting to the earth like sheets of gunpowder rain. When the smoke cleared and the guns fell silent, the looting began. Caucasians poured into Greenwood neighborhood on the city's northwest side to ransack the homes of African Americans, American Africans, chased away by marauding mobs and their show of force. Plumes of charcoal black smoke billow over Gaza earlier this month, plummeting to earth like sheets of gunpowder rain. When the smoke cleared and the bomb stopped, the looting began. Israeli settlers poured into the East Jerusalem neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah to steal the homes of Palestinians intimidated by the marauding mobs and their show of force. I love this article, and I read it because the comparisons are real. And I got to say, you know, I understand what the European Jews have always said, but, you know, you have no right to take the place, to take those homes and take that land, just like the Europeans had no right to come and colonize the world that they did and do what they did. But, of course, many can argue, well, you know, our right was divine. It was manifest destiny. Our God. Okay. Yeah. Every tragedy is unique in its own way. Yet these two horrific massacres, 100 years and 7,000 miles apart, share the same genetic markers. What has largely gone unnoticed by the news media is its reportage on the anniversary of Tulsa's 1921 siege and more recent bloodshed in Palestine, is where both were part of an elaborate heist orchestrated by the world's largest criminal enterprise. 500 years ago, European settler colonialism has designated itself as the rap sheet that stretches from the American Midwest to the Middle East, Los Angeles to Levine, and East Timor to East St. Louis. By any name, the outfit, La Costa Nostra, Murder Incorporated, this worldwide kleptocracy main objective is the culmination of wealth through the death and dispossession of people of color. I repeat, this worldwide kleptocracy main objective is the culmination of wealth through the death and dispossession of people of color. Has evidence considered the stark similarities between the violence visited upon American Africans in Oklahoma a century ago and the Palestinians earlier this month? 11 days of Israeli airstrikes left 243 Palestinians dead, nearly half of them women and children, another 1,000 injured, and more than 1,000 Palestinians homeless and their homes destroyed. With the support of Western media, Israeli government officials qualified their assault as a response to Palestinian aggression, a bite they carry out by $800 rockets. This is the Palestinians. They got $800 rockets with a maximum range of 3 miles. But international law is clear. Israel annexation of Palestine's land since 1967 war is a violation of all legal norms. And it's ensuring occupation tantamount to a war crime. Israeli settlers have no more right to defend themselves from displaced Palestinians than an intruder has the right to defend himself while burglarizing someone else's home. And even if they did, the internationally recognized principle of proportionality prohibits such an outsized military response. Israel's manufacture of an Arab boogeyman has a pretense for its smash and grab mirrors Jim Crow's slander of American African men as rapists. When authorities arrested a black teenager for innocently stumbling into a white woman, a white elevator operator on this day in 1921, rumors quickly spread across Tulsa that he was to be lynched, led by several black World War II veterans, of roughly 75 brothers, some of them armed, marched to the jailhouse, confronting a much larger Caucasian mob to demand due process. The sheriff had actually reassured the black contingent that he would abide by the law, but as they were leaving, someone in the white mob attempted to disarm one of the brothers. A shot was fired. Oh, it's on, damn. A shot was fired. It's over. And the ensuing deadly firefight provided Caucasian Tulsans with a cover to steal everything that wasn't nailed down in the Greenwood neighborhood. That was the most prosperous American African community in the country in 1921. During the night and following day, deputized Caucasians killed more than 300 American Africans and set fire to 40 square blocks engulfing in flames. Over 1,200 American African homes, hospitals, schools, churches, and 150 American African owned businesses. The National Guard arrested and detained 6,000 Tulsans of American African descent, releasing them only if their Caucasian employer vouched for them. 9,000 American Africans were left homeless and lived in tents well into the winter of 1921, actually until the spring of 1922. Similar to the Israeli settlers who laid claim to Palestine's home 100 years later, Caucasian Tulsans looted black homes and businesses. This was especially devastating because many American Africans at the time kept their life savings under their mattresses and in tin cans, owing to the failure of the Freedmen's Bank in 1874, which was a result of mismanagement by corruption of white bank executives. Freed captives lost virtually all of their wealth they had managed to accumulate in the decades since the Emancipation Proclamation. You can draw a straight line connecting the dots. The closing of the Freedmen's Bank to the subprime mortgage fraud, which robbed American Africans of more than their wealth than at any time since 1874, just as you can draw a perfectly straight line between the expulsion of indigenous people from their homelands by European settlers, Palestinian apartheid, South Africa, or gentrified Brooklyn, and the modus operandi remains the same, dislocating American Africans, Arabs, and indigenous people either by finance or, failing that, by brute force. In 1892, a Memphis mob lynched three American African men for defending a black-owned grocery store from goons sent by an envious Caucasian competitor. Their slayings launched Ida B. Wells' career as an anti-lynching crusader. Foreshadowing the Swedish economist Gunther Myrdal's conclusion about white jealousy in his epic 1943 tome, An American Dilemma, Wells reported later to her Wells' reportage led her to conclude that lynching was seldom used to sanction rape, but rather to condemn consensual sex between black men and white women, or alternately as an excuse to get rid of Negroes who were acquiring wealth and property, and thus a race theorized and terrorized and kept the niggas down. Conversely, during the 1906 Atlanta riots, a 12-year-old Walter White, who would go on to serve as the NAACP's executive secretary, recalled a white mob attacking the homes of a neighbor, thus was too nice for a Negro to live in, because his home was too nice. So he didn't want to get it. And of course, if you know Walter White at that time, he looked Caucasian. He looked white. That's where he was able to do some research, because they thought that he was white. And he was executive director of the NAACP after James Weldon Johnson. Similarly, white Georgians in 1918 lynched Mary Turner, her husband Hayes, and 11 other African Americans in connection with the murder of a vicious white plantation owner. When swooped into nearly 500 parcels of land abandoned by blacks fleeing the outbreak of violence, it is hardly a coincidence that the U.S. military did much the same thing to Iraqi oil fields after hundreds of thousands of Iraqis fled their homes to elude the Pentagon's 2007 assassination program, euphemistically called the Surge. Nor is it a coincidence that the white mob that chased Malcolm X's family from Omaha by setting fire to his childhood home later claimed that the land it was built on. Likewise, Zionist organizations began a campaign of terror to pave the way for Jewish immigration shortly after the end of the Second World War, assassinating the Swedish diplomat, bombing Jewish King David Hotel. The bombing of the King David Hotel resulted in 91 deaths and murdering at least 107 Palestinians in the massacre in the village of Dera Yassin. on and on and on it goes in a white settler state, in a white settler state that promotes sectarianism as a substitute for class in the global struggle between capital and labor, encouraging white workers to steal from their black and brown co-workers rather than seek a fairer distribution of the spoils altogether. The Tulsa massacre is a prime example of occurring as it did during the worst labor unrest in the nation's history. Ignoring pleas from black workers to desegregate the ranks of organized labor, Caucasian laborers who went on strike for better wages and working conditions often found themselves out of a job, replaced by American Africans fleeing the Jim Crow South. Racism was good for industrialists' bottom line. The same was true in Britain. Across Africa, where working stiffs were bequeathed acres of other people's land rather than a fair share of their labor at home. The sons of a butcher, Ian Smith, South Africa, Rhodesia, Zimbabwe. The son of a butcher, Ian Smith was the best prime minister. Ian Smith was the last prime minister of Rhodesia, now known as Zimbabwe. Among other atrocities, he is known for the attack on a refugee camp during that country's civil war, which the Geneva Convention defines as crimes against humanity. It is the latest assault. Israeli bombed a Gazan refugee camp, killing at least two women and seven children. And at last month, the International Commission on Inquiry on Systematic Racist Police Violence Against People of African Descent in the United States urged the International Criminal Court to investigate as a crime against humanity the systematic police killings of American Africans in this country. As neoliberal era grinds to a halt, tensions between white bosses and black and brown laboring classes are beginning to reach boiling point. Okay. Hold on, Jay. Let me finish reading this. I got you, okay? Thank you. The police murder of George Floyd last year produced a largest nationwide protest in U.S. history. In that same vein, indigenous and black workers are pouring into the streets in Colombia, Bolivia, Ecuador to challenge rulers. And in Brazil, police raids of the mostly black Fafalas in the province of Rio de Janeiro have left 800 civilians killed over the past year. The goal of all of this state terrorism is nothing more than to recolonize working people of the and class people of color. Or as the late American scholar Otis Madison once said, the purpose of racism is to control the behavior of white people, not black people. The purpose of racism is to control the behavior of white people, not black people. For blacks, guns and tanks are sufficient if we had them. That's for sure. What a deep comparison. 646, good afternoon.
Hey, what's happening, Oshi? Hey, what's going on, bro?
I'm doing well, brother. What about you?
Oh, man, I'm always doing well.
Good.
I just wanted to read something right quick for you.
Go ahead, brother.
That I think you and your listening audience may really, really enjoy in regards to this subject matter.
Okay.
From one of the great minds of a Negro peed who name will go anonymous at this time.
Okay.
But it goes like this. There was never a black Wall Street. It only existed in the minds of those who wanted to revive history to promote black capitalism. The name of the small area of Tulsa that was destroyed was Greenwood. It was made up of mostly poor black descendants of victims of slavery whose main employee was white people. This was during the Jim Crow segregation, and there was a few blacks who got wealthy from forced patronism of their businesses, but this was no utopia black capitalism likes to make it out to be. the people lying about this history and saying during Jim Crow we had everything we needed are those who aspired to be just like the capitalists on Wall Street and the open air market for victims of slavery. Now, what do you think of that, Oshi?
That's a damn shame. Let me say this, Jess. It's a damn shame. Whoever wrote it, and it's really a damn shame, is somebody, just as you say, a Negro peon, you know, somebody who suffers from white-itis or Uruguay-itis. Or who has been infected, or who has been infected with the Urugu virus, huh? I know this person.
You know this Negro well.
Yeah, I probably do.
I'll tell you who the Negro is once we get off the air. But you know the Negro well.
And see, the bottom line is, I think that's the argument for Tulsa. There's documentation. There's video documentation. There's written the burning of Tulsa, the burning of the Greenwood District did not destroy all of that. Yes, burned a lot of buildings. Yes, probably killed over 300 people. Yes, they have been finding mass graves and so forth. But it has been well documented what those brothers and sisters had. The businesses, the homes and so forth. Well documented. And it was, and reason why it was the most wealthiest part for African Americans because of oil. Because the land struck oil. When they moved our people from the southeast, particularly Florida and Georgia, marching them across under the Trail of Tears along with indigenous people, and they got to Oklahoma. This is the land that this government gave. If you watch the beginning of Exterminate All the Brutes, the Caucasian says to the Native American woman, "You give me my property back," which meant us, because we had escaped. A lot of us didn't just escape north. We also went south into Florida and stayed with the indigenous people in Florida, Seminoles. And so he says, "I will let you go to an area of land that we have made for you," which of course is Oklahoma. And of course, they didn't know. Jay.
What, Oshi?
Jay,
did you just see the text I sent you?
Yeah.
That's who it is. Now, do you believe that? But that Negro is sick anyway.
I'm stunned. I'm serious. I ain't going to say it on this radio program, but I'm stunned.
No, I know. That's why I didn't say it.
Yeah, but I am stunned.
I just wanted to read it and then I wanted to put that in your ear because, see, what happened with our people is we have this real sickness that we ain't really done or achieved nothing that the white man ain't back in control. And we can't accept the fact that the white man, anytime we do anything of value and substance, he gonna destroy it. That's why you don't have no Black Wall Streets today. That's why you don't have Greenwoods today.
That's why
we as a people don't have community. We the only people in this country that don't have any semblance of something that is our
Jay,
own.
Let me say this. Let me say this. I live in what many of our people consider today as the Mecca for American African people, Atlanta. We don't have one damn supermarket in this mother. We ain't got shit up in here, but we ain't got some restaurants, beauty parlors, and barber shops. We have.
And this is the crazy thing. That one of the most popular restaurants in Atlanta is Slutty Vegan, and the food is garbage if you're a real vegetarian. If you're a real vegetarian, you wouldn't eat that garbage. It's high sodium. It's high fat. The content ain't even real true vegetarian style eating, if the truth be told. But it's the most popular restaurant in
Well,
Atlanta.
It's not a restaurant. It's a carryout. And people wait in a long line and she has a few trucks. I believe she's going to get a brick and mortar restaurant. I mean, that carryout is a brick and mortar restaurant too, but it's non-seating. It's a carryout. You go, wait in line, you go through there, you give the order, and you pay for it, and they give it to you. You walk out the door, you know. But I understand what you're saying.
Growing too.
Oh, tremendously.
But it ain't real healthy vegan food. Yeah. I mean, you know, the bottom line is this. Why don't we just accept the fact that in this country that black people on the collective cannot have nothing? And that if we have achieved something, people like that Negro who wrote that statement is going to try to put forward a different narrative to make it seem like black folks is trying to exploit other black folks, and that it wasn't reality. When the truth was, it was reality until the white man came and took it from them. Just like the narrative is wherever white folks are, that there's a segment of that population that's controlled by white folks because they are the business owners. And then the other white folks within that community benefit from it. Okay. But black folks can't have that.
Right. Let me know.
But everybody else can.
Right.
It's BS.
And the bottom line is, you're right, Jay, there is no place in this country. And rescue me if I'm wrong. If I am wrong, contact me here on this program. You come on this program and tell me. There is a place where we are self-contained, where we control the economics.
Ain't no place.
I know it's not. That's what I'm saying. I'm putting it out there. Correct me if I'm wrong.
We've been here for 500 years.
You know? Correct me if I'm wrong.
And you're telling me in 500 years you got other nationalities and ethnic groups that can claim that? And here it is, we the ones who supposedly built this. We can't claim that? That's telling you something.
That's what I'm saying, Jay. Any place that at that time, because of deep segregation, we knew we couldn't go there, so we created our own. But now, because, I want you to buy from me. I'm targeting stuff for you. I'm making you come buy from me. You can't do shit for yourself. No way are you going to have a community that's going to be self-contained. I got to go, Jay. My time is up.
Hey, brother, listen, just put me on hold.
Okay.
And when you finish, just click over right quick.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to, I gotta go. Cause I'm about to get, I'm about to cut loose, as the saying goes. So I might as well go ahead and end this. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs. With the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E. Because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, you have a great weekend, a safe weekend. Enjoy one another. Love one another. Respect one another. Let's work with one another. Let's build with one another. Join the Pan-African Federalist Movement. We need to go home. We need to kick everybody's ass out of Africa and control. It is ours. It has more resources, always had, and it still has, and it's ours. Stop begging. Stop pleading. Stop wishing these mothers. They're not going to do it. It's not in them to do it. Brothers and sisters, Shem Hotep means go in peace. Isante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a good weekend, a safe weekend, family. Much love. Hope to see you back here on Monday. Peace.